one reason that present.
All right, gather around, campers. It's time for another, yes, yet another. We're going to be here for the next 3 hours. Another version, another edition of Bathroom Spears Broadsides. It's June 23rd, 2002. We have special guests, Del Templeton, Carl Wilson, and numerous interviews coming up. So stay with us.
This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to sleep. This morning, I was awoken by a man with a handgun. He's got a book of rules that says I ain't got no right to be. Who owns the land?
Who owns the land?
Who owns the land? Could it be that there's a connection? Who owns the land? To my daily eviction. Who owns the land? And the extermination. Who owns the land? Of the Native American. Who owns the land? Won't someone please tell me? Who owns the land? 'Cause I am just a white man. Who owns the land? I live in the Americas. Who owns the land? How did I get here? Its own self. Maybe it's not Native America. The homeless are a problem for only one reason. My president raises a question: who owns the land? The homeless are a problem for only one reason. Your presence raises a question: who owns the land?
Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is home? Ecocide, genocide, where is
home?
And that was 15 with Land, which is the intro tune I've been using for the last few weeks. This is Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And I'm your host, Robert Norris. We're going to be doing 3.5 hours this morning of civil rights on the streets and around the town and in the studio with us. And I'll introduce them, although I think we're going to have a call-in first from activist Jim Costner up north. But in the studio with us are two activists concerned with expanding survival rights and the basic necessities that homeless people here in Santa Cruz, 1,000 to 2,000 of them, need and in fact are entitled to. We have Del Templeton, who's the brother of Larry Templeton and a member of Camp Hope. Belly up to the mic there, Del, and say hello.
Hello.
All right. And with him, the irascible, incorrigible curmudgeon, Carl Wilson of Friends of Camp Paradise, now Friends of Camp Hope, on the board of the Santa Cruz Service Corps. Hey, Cole.
Not for long.
Now, put closer to the mic. Closer to the mic.
Yes. okay. Hi, guys.
There you go. It's a very. The mic is made to be intimately dealt with here in the Free Radio Studios. Now, for all you out there who want to be a part of this discussion, and we're not really going to begin with Carl and Dell for a few minutes because I'm expecting a call. In fact, here it comes from Jim Costner up north. You should write down the number 427-FRSC, Free Radio Santa Cruz, 427-3772, and give us a call. But first, since we only have one line, we're going to take this call.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, hello, Robert. Hello, Free Radio Santa Cruz. This is Jim.
Talk real loud, Jim.
This is Jim giving you a call from out of town, and we're calling you about the Carson City 10, who are 10 Native youth in Carson City, Nevada, who are all facing the death penalty, or double life sentence at the very least, and it results from an incident that happened back in 98 where a reactionary gang in Carson City, Nevada, called the Eastside Tokers, had harassed and physically violated a Native youth, one of the sisters, and broke her nose and physically violated her. She called the police, and the police, as they do in the case of the Indians and in the case of the oppressed, they did nothing and told her to go home. They didn't even respond. And she went and got some of her relations, and her relations went to go confront them, and a fight broke out resulting from that. And when the fight was over, no one was killed and there were people who were beat up, but no one had been killed or anything on that level. When everyone had left, then the cops had come in. After the cops come in, one of the gang members was killed, and now the system says that it's the responsibility of the 10 youth, and that they're pushing for the death penalty in this case. And I'm actually presently with one of the fathers of one of the defendants, Rock Sr., who lives in Carson City. He's been a longtime resident of Carson City. And his son, Rocky Boyce Jr., is one of the defendants that's looking at death row. And they actually have to go to trial on July 22nd. So that's why we're calling Free Radio and calling the Santa Cruz community to see if we can rally some support, as well as inform and raise awareness in the community around these types of issues. So I want to pass the phone over to Rock at this time.
Thank you, Jim.
Hi.
Hey, Rock. How you doing?
I'm doing good.
Good. You sound like you're talking louder than Jim is. Keep it up. Talk real loud. We have a kind of a transmission problem. But so your son is facing serious consequences?
Yes, he is.
Tell me a little bit about that.
Well, Jim kind of broke it down there a little bit, but basically is what it is a small town over here, and they're trying to play the Mexican community up against the Native American community, and, it ain't got nothing to do with none of that. All it was, some gangbanger trying to start some stuff, and some things went down, and now they're trying to, they did a big group roundup. They just started picking up all the Native Americans, who was associated or whatever, and try to say that they were a gang affiliated or something, and basically, they're just trying to wipe out a couple generations over here, and, it's all a political trial, and it's just no good, it's really bad, and all these kids are facing some pretty heavy stuff, and, they ain't got nothing coming, so we've just been trying to find support, wherever we can, and trying to get it out to the world, because, like I said, the people over here are trying to play the Mexicans and the Native Americans against each other, and it's just a system, the same way it's always been, and just trying to divide and conquer and, starting all this trouble over here. So we're kind of in a bad way right now. So that's kind of where we're at.
This is Carson City we're talking about?
Yeah, Carson City, Nevada.
Now, where are you calling from?
I'm in Salt Lake right now.
Wow. So are you, is your defense pretty much located in Salt Lake? Is the trial happening in Salt Lake?
No, it's going to be happening in Carson City. Mm-hmm. I had to come over here on some business today on some other support stuff. We're trying to get national movement in here, and but tomorrow we have a status hearing, and we don't know what's going to go on there, and then the main trial is going to start on July 22nd, and they've already divided them. They got 10 right now. They got 10 Native Americans charged with one crime, and they're all facing serious consequences on it. They're all charged with first-degree murder, and conspiracy, and all kinds of crazy charges. And they just keep bootstrapping as they're going along here.
And this all happened when? When was this incident?
This happened in August of 98. And it happened on a political level because of the re-elections at the time. The sheriff in Carson City that said he got elected on saying that he was cleaning up gangs and stuff. And then as soon as he got in there, there was no more gangs. Came up time for a re-election, and this came up, and he said he was being tough on gangs again. Now, for the last 3 years, it's just been kind of pushed to the side and this and that. Now, re-elections are coming back up, so now they're putting a big push back on to make another showing over here.
So your son and how many others have been held in jail since 1998?
We got them bailed out. They're out, but they're all facing these consequences right now. There's 10 of them.
Mm-hmm. And what are they doing?
They were all arrested from the age of...
And how old are these?
14 to 21 years of age at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all housed in the adult jails and everything else. It was crazy.
How long did it take you to bail them out?
Took us a couple of months to get things together. And when we had the American Indian Movement come in and got involved in a lot of stuff, a lot of the bails were reduced drastically, and that's what's crazy on facing these kind of charges, and they reduce the bails, you know, where we're able to get them out, and yet they're still going to try to, you know, push these kind of sentences and stuff on them.
What's the bail?
They range anywhere from $100,000 down to $10,000.
And what is the bail? What is the bail now?
They're out on bail right now.
I mean, that for the $10,000, $100,000 each, or?
Yeah.
But you say they reduced the bail.
Yeah, well, they reduced them in the beginning. That's how we were able to get them out. And it came up to, through the bondsman and stuff, I don't know, around $20,000 we had to come up with and do some different efforts of some land developers and stuff like that. We were able to, you know, make arrangements with the bail bondsmen and make payments and get them out of there. Because that was our first part of the defense, was we had to get them out, you know, because they were going to just railroad them right off the get-go. The first day in court, you know, they were told that on their arraignment that they'd be facing the death penalty. So, you know, we knew we had to get them out and try to buy some time on it.
And now here we are 4 years later, and they still haven't been tried?
Right.
Is that because the defense has requested these postponements?
No, the defense hasn't. Actually, the district attorney in Carson, a judge reduced the charges to second degree, and the district attorney appealed it to the Nevada State Supreme Court to get first degree reinstated. And 2 weeks ago, they came back out and reinstated the first degree charges. So now the trial's going to go again.
And can you name the defendants, or do you guys call yourselves a particular? Do they call themselves a particular name, or they have the something 10, or?
We're calling them the Carson City 10 right now.
Gotcha. And what can people do to get more information about this and or help the Carson City 10?
We need financial support. We need people support. We need people that's been involved in movements and organizing and different things like that, you know, so kind of, you know, a lot of direction and stuff on it. Jim here, that's from Oakland, you know, he's been our contact down on that side and stuff, and he knows the contacts over there, you know, where people can get a hold of us, and we could be contacted in Carson City, too, you know, at my home there. My phone number in Carson City is 88, or area code 775-883-6505.
That's 775-883-6505?
Yeah.
And for those who didn't get that number, all you have to do is contact 423-HUFF. That's the HUFF line here in Santa Cruz, 423-4833, and I will get the Carson City 10 contact number to you. Is there a website people can go to if they don't want to, you know, like, spend money or may have trouble reaching you one way or another?
Not really. There's some information on the Native American website, but not a whole lot of it.
If they go into a search engine with Carson City 10, will they get through to you? Are you there, or?
I'm not sure. My wife takes care of on the computer side, so I'm not really too sure on that.
I gotcha. Well, what we can do is maybe put folks in touch with Jim up in Oakland.
Yeah.
And he can pass on more information. We're talking with, again, your name is Rock?
Rocky.
I'm sorry, Rocky.
Rocky Boy Sr.
Hey, Rocky Boy Sr.
Mm-hmm.
Who's trying to do some defense work for his son, who's a member of the Carson City 10, who are facing, I guess, first-degree murder charges thanks to a judicial overturning of a decision 2 weeks ago. And when's the trial scheduled to start?
It'll be starting July 22nd.
July 22nd, Carson City. Well, that's a long way to go for us out here, but maybe we can be of support. And if folks, again, want to reach, get more information, maybe the best thing to do is to call 423-HUFF, and I will pass on these numbers, because I think it's going to be difficult for people to write down long numbers at this time, although we can repeat it once if you'd like.
Yeah, it'd be area code 775-883-6505.
Hey, thank you, Rocky. Is there more you want to say before we...
Let me pass you on to Russ Redner here of the American Indian Movement.
Okie doke.
Hello?
Hey, Russ.
Hey, what's up?
Well, it's showtime here at Free Radio Santa Cruz. Anything you want to add on this Carson City case?
Well, we need the support of people from Santa Cruz and the larger area there. We're trying to organize some caravans and bring some people into Carson City and to support the defendants. And also to do some political education in that area. I mean, Carson City and the Nevada area is completely apathetic to, you know, what's going on around the world. It's kind of one of the places that sort of gets overlooked, you know, in terms of political activity. So, yet they still continue to do the work of apartheid. And so they're doing their work, it's just that they don't raise much consciousness in opposition to that kind of work. And so I'd like to call upon the people there to help us out and come on over and get involved in this serious case. The only other time I can think historically that they had this kind of a case, you have to go back to 1863, when they hung 38 Dakota people in Minnesota, Mankato, Minnesota, the same day that they signed the Emancipation Proclamation, President Abraham Lincoln signed the execution order for 38 Dakota people who were simply trying to eat because they were starving on the reservation. And as we know, Abraham Lincoln was a great, what they call, Indian fighter, Indian killer. So,
I don't think most of us do know that. You might want to...
No, well, Abraham Lincoln and his buddy Jefferson Davis fought together against some of the more historical figures in the Indian world, Tecumseh and them. And that's how they sort of got themselves recognized as being Indian killers. So, you know... There's a great hypocrisy here where, you know, America upholds this person as one of their greatest, if not the greatest, leader for them. This guy is a murderer of Indian people. So, and his counterpart, Jefferson Davis, you know, they have a connection. So the people need to read the history books and, you know, look at it from an indigenous point of view if they want to get, you know, more accurate in terms of the education of this country.
Now, people, Russ, want to get more info about the Carson City 10. Is there a website they can go to?
There's no website now. The number that Rock gave you is the number that we have as a contact number. And then, you know, we have James. You can always contact James. And then, and those are the primarily the two numbers. We work with a lot of the, well, we're working on this group to try to bring a collaboration of organizations together under the United Front.
Would any of the Carson City history of this case be available either through, you know, media or through, if anybody's written about it, I'd encourage you to, you know,
yeah,
post it somewhere. I mean,
We haven't had a chance to. See, we've been waiting for the case to come back.
Gotcha.
And this is just a grassroots effort, you know, in terms of the organizing. The defense committee is mainly the parents.
I see.
Mainly the parents of one of the defendants, and they've been holding it together for the last, you know, since the case broke in '98. And we've been able to come up with over the years is a flyer. We've had several events. We had an event in San Francisco about a year ago, and it was in the Mission District, and we advertised for it. We put out information primarily only in the San Francisco area, and we had maybe 25 or so people from the San Francisco area, and then the family came over from all the way from Carson City on about a 5 or 6 hour drive, and they brought 30 people with them, so they brought more people from Carson City than showed up from San Francisco. And then the other issue was that they talked about was this issue that every time we bring up this case, people immediately go to the, well, it's Mexican against Indian. And I see that as some sort of
divide and conquer.
No, I mean, by the people that we're trying to talk to in order to raise consciousness, they throw that back in our face as if that's the reason why they can't get involved in this case, because it pits these two groups against each other. And while it looks like that on the surface, nothing could be further from the truth. It's the same war in terms of the who the enemy is, colonialist, imperialist, whatever. It's those guys working their magic, and the divide and conquer definitely enters into it. But my focus is on the people that are supposed to be progressive, who do not give the attention that they give other issues, simply because I believe that there's prejudice in an activism way towards Indian issues. Mm-hmm. And it's a cop-out. It's a serious cop-out when activists who will organize on to protect butterfly wings, all of a sudden, you know, they have no consciousness in terms of the American Indian, you know.
Or they're interested in rights of people many thousands of miles away and don't care about the local homeless.
I call upon that kind of, that's a revolutionary, you know, challenge. To put your prejudices aside and start organizing in a real serious way against this country. And the way to do that is to quit, you know, being superficial about it, and start addressing the issue of apartheid in this country as it affects the first people of this land, and that's the indigenous people.
Russell, I'm running out of time here, and this was going to be like, but let me. I don't want to. I'm going to cut you off, but I want to suggest that you email to me. You still there?
Yeah.
An account of the story, anything that's been written about it. And I will try to get it posted on SantaCruzIndieMedia.org, so at least it'll be posted somewhere, so you can refer people to it.
Okay.
Does that sound good?
Yeah. Okay.
Listen, we've been talking with, what's your last name, Russell?
Redner.
Russell Redner, who's a very well-spoken and from my mind, well-informed activist on a number of issues ranging from child support laws, but mainly you're a Native American activist, right?
Well, I'm a indigenous...
thank you.
Warrior, that's revolutionary. I don't want to. Those Native American activists is another kind of a title that.
You know a lot. You know a lot about.
You want to organize on sub tier level too. That's what you do. But we're trying to take it to the highest level.
Gotcha. We've also been talking with James Costner, and of course with Rocky Boy Sr., who's the father of one of the Carson City 10. I want to thank you for calling, and again remind you that if you want to get the contact numbers for this Carson City 10 group and how to help them out and learn more about them, you can give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, or call directly to
775-88-6505.
Right, 775-883-6505. And thank you very much, Russ, and thanks to the rest of you folks there for doing the kind of work you're doing.
Okay, wa alaikum salam.
Alrighty. Bye-bye.
And doesn't look like things are going too well in Carson City for at least 10 people. you want more information on that, as I said, give a call to 423-HUFF. If you want to join us in the studio now, however, the phone lines are open. You can give a call to 427-3772. We have the patiently waiting Carl Wilson and Del Templeton of supporters of Camp Hope and folks who will be at a meeting later today at 6 o'clock of the Santa Cruz Service Corps, which voted for a board of directors, I guess, 2 or 3 weeks ago, and then suddenly got mangled and disentangled, or should I say detached and split up into numerous portions, told to go home, and elections annulled by Paul Lee of the Deep Pockets Paul, as some have called him, who essentially funds the Santa Cruz Service Corps and seems to have taken a rather strong position on that issue. We do have a phone call here before we go directly to our studio guests.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Yeah, Robert, hey, I know that you're, you know, you're doing your show twice a week, but you're not doing enough work on my issue, okay? You got to get behind my issue or you're not radical enough. You got me?
That was the indefatigable, that's tireless V-Man, who covers a lot of issues and sometimes expresses his views with sharp candor. I take it that was a critical comment about giving 20 minutes to the Carson City folks and also the concerns that the activists expressed from Salt Lake, that people here in Santa Cruz are and elsewhere are not really alert enough to these issues. I hadn't heard of the Carson City 10, so I don't know. I do have a time problem running into here because I have a phone call I'd planned for 10:30, but I'm going to begin kind of a little conversation, an intro. You know, maybe I should just ask you guys to wait briefly. Are you okay? Yeah, we have a guy I've been trying to get on the air for the last 2.5 months. His name is Michael Boyd, and we may be getting him shortly. Before we do, however, we're going to do a little sort of street interview review. I do this habitually on this show when I can manage it. Do a lot of recording of what folks have to say down on Pacific Avenue and elsewhere who are actually in the belly of the beast and in the jaws of the monster and just out there. And I'm using somewhat more colorful metaphors than some would use, but there's a lot of the time it's okay, but a lot of the time it's not, particularly with a city council meeting coming up on Tuesday that will be essentially considering a slam dunk set of repressive policies and laws that have been proposed by some merchants using apparently Candy Jackson of Jackson's Shoes as a mouthpiece here. I've talked about that a little bit. These are new laws that would make it illegal for people to gather in a group of six for more than an hour on Pacific Avenue. Say goodbye to your constitution. We don't need John Ashcroft when we've got the Downtown Association. Anyway, we're going to be talking about that, but let's hear a few interviews, then go directly to this phone call, and then we'll talk to our studio guests.
It's about 12:30, and we have a gypsy lady here on the street. Help a gypsy lady with some donations, says her sign, for lady things like soap, shampoos, lotion, etc. No shelter, wants me at all, no one wants me in this town, no one loves me, where's my hug?
Get your hug. Working harder.
Well, trying.
Yeah.
Waiting for my SSI case to be open. Depressed, very stressed. I don't use any drugs or drink. Thank you. God bless you. Don't let that money blow away. Peace, love, and happiness. How you doing? What's your name?
Paula.
How's it going?
Not good. River Street shelter kicked me out for a lot of reasons.
What did they say the reasons were?
Racist, you know, they're kind of people, meaning the shelter kind of people, you know, people that come into town, they need to make more services, better services there. It's dirty, people don't respect you there, you know, the River Street shelter.
Why did they tell you that you had to leave yourself?
Because they didn't like who I am for what I am.
What exactly did they object to? If you want to say.
Well, they said, we'll kick you out, and, you know, just for somebody that was attacking me, you know, and other stuff, you know.
So how long have you been on the street now?
here in Santa Cruz for 5 months.
And have you been given any tickets for sleeping or hassled by police?
Yes. Not sleeping, but panhandling.
And when was the last time you got a ticket for panhandling?
2 weeks ago.
And where did you get it?
Right here.
And what did the police officer tell you?
Well, I was panhandling, faking that, oh, you're from New York, blah, 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 you know, like,
sign that said you were from New York.
Yeah, they were like, you know, they don't like people from out of town, you know.
Did they say you were not telling the truth on your sign?
Yes.
Were you telling the truth?
Yes, I was.
And do you know the name of the officer who gave you the ticket?
I don't know. It's a redhead lady. Redhead,
Sergeant or an officer?
An officer.
Huh. And have you been to court with that ticket yet?
Not yet.
Well, perhaps we'll talk to you more about that later.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank you again. Anything you want to add?
Nope.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And now we go directly to a phone call. We're talking to Michael Boyd. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
And Michael, you, for anyone else who's out there, you can also catch us at www.microradio.net/FRSC. Again, www.microradio.net/FRSC. That's if you're out of the area. Of course, I don't know how you'd be able to hear this if you're out of the area, but that's a paradox I won't get into. So, Michael, I ran into you at City Council, 3 or 4 months ago, and you had some interesting things to say to the City Council, and I guess you also went to the Citizens Police Rah-Rah Board, as I call it, or the Citizens Police Review Board, as they call themselves, and you were concerned about getting some public documents and concerned all surrounding an incident. Why don't you describe that incident and how this whole situation began?
Okay, well, basically what happened is on September 11, 2001, the day of the national tragedy, in the morning at about 9:30 a.m., my property manager, Jesus, was waiting for the city compliance officer to come do his weekly inspection of my property.
And where is your property?
My property is at 215 Raymond Street in Santa Cruz, across the street from the little community center there.
This is in the Beach Flats?
In the Beach Flats, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so he was out there waiting for the compliance officer to come and do the weekly walkthrough inspection of our property. And a gentleman approached my manager and asked him for a cigarette. My manager gave him a cigarette and then went into his apartment to go to the bathroom. And while he was in the bathroom, a police officer knocked on the door, and my manager's wife, Connie, went ahead and invited the officer in, and then the officer proceeded to arrest Jesus as an alleged drug dealer. He alleged that he was conspiring with this other gentleman to deal heroin.
Well, tobacco is much more lethal. Perhaps he should have charged him with giving away free cigarettes.
Well, in any case, my manager isn't a heroin dealer, so they then proceeded to arrest him and take him to jail. And he was in jail for approximately 96 hours until I bailed him out.
And your manager is a man of Mexican-American descent?
Yes, he is. His place of national origin is in Mexico.
And who was the officer who undertook this arrest?
Oh, I can't really remember what his name was. Mm-hmm.
Well, go ahead. No problem.
I don't really remember.
Always like to hold officers accountable for what they do on this show, and
well, I certainly did my best to hold him accountable as well.
And how did that happen?
Well, when he was in jail, I basically confronted the police and said, "Hey, look, this guy was working for me. Why did you arrest him?" And they weren't very responsive. So I actually talked to the district attorney, who was at his arraignment, and explained to him that basically the reason they arrested him wasn't just because he was Mexican. I had just paid him 2 days before for a month's work, so he was in possession of a large sum of cash in his wallet. So when the police searched his person, they found this cash in his wallet, and, you know, using police logic, they determined that since he dealer.
Now, on what basis did they search him? I mean, what, for the simply giving the guy a cigarette, or?
Well, they searched him because they had already searched the other gentleman, and when they searched him, they found that he was in possession of heroin.
I see. So they assumed that it takes one to know one or something?
And the other gentleman told the police, falsely so, that Jesus was the person that had sold it to him.
I see. Now, was Jesus held 96 hours, a long time to hold someone? Was that before the arraignment, or was that after the arraignment?
That was before the arraignment.
He wasn't arraigned for 96 hours?
Approximately, yes.
Was that on a Friday or something?
Yeah, it was on a Friday, I think.
Yeah, well, that might explain it. Usually, then you get arraigned on Tuesday or something ridiculous.
Right.
So, interesting stuff. So, he eventually, what, the charges were dropped against him?
Well, what happened is what I did is, subsequent to that, while he was still in jail, I was rather upset about this. And being new to the area, I had heard that that Santa Cruz had a police review board, citizen police review board. So
little did you know.
So I proceeded to file a complaint with the citizen police review board, and they basically didn't do anything for at least 6 or 7 months. And I didn't really hear from them. At one point, they talked to me about doing an alternative dispute resolution process, but they made a determination that that would be possible.
You mean mediation?
Mediation, yeah.
Right, mediation is a way of saying, gee, don't attack our officers, let's all sit down and be friends, forget any particular abuses that happened.
Well, they weren't willing to do mediation.
Police don't usually want to do mediation because, you know, it involves even suggestion that there might be some problem on both sides is not something that you usually get from the police department.
Right.
At least not locally.
Well, so what I should point out, though, is that the police review board, while it did not uphold my, basically I had three charges that I filed with the review board. One that his arrest was false because he wasn't a heroin dealer. Two, that he was wrongfully incarcerated, that he was wrongfully held in jail. And three, that when his arrest was based on discrimination, and his arrest and subsequent detention was based on
racial profiling?
Basically on the fact that he was a Mexican American,
right,
with a large sum of cash on his possession.
Mm-hmm. Well, we know all those Mexican Americans with lots of money are probably criminals.
And the other thing that happened, Jesus told me about while he was on the way to jail being booked, is the officer turned to him and told him that he was going to take his money to buy a very large burrito.
Uh-huh, I see.
And,
burrito joke.
That he was going to get a burrito, and Jesus was a little upset about that. Not being native citizen of America, he was probably a little scared. And so.
And again, the date of this arrest was September 11th, right?
Yeah, September 11th, 2001.
And you filed your complaint, what, in October or November?
Yeah, well, I followed it a couple days after his arrest.
Now,
like the 13th.
How long did it take the DA? Did the DA ever file charges or not?
Well, what the DA did is they tried to charge him with the conspiracy to deal heroin, that he was conspiring with this other guy. Now, the other guy, he actually had several prior arrests. For the same thing, and during the inquest, I guess it's called, when he went before the judge,
mm-hmm,
they were asking about the evidence they had against him, and the officer had claimed that Jesus had been paid for the heroin with a $20 bill, and when they searched him, the other guy, they found he was in possession of heroin, and he had a $20 bill in his possession. When they searched the approximately $970 of cash in Jesus' possession, while he had a large sum of cash, he didn't have one $20 bill.
Oops.
So it was pretty apparent that they didn't have any real evidence that he had done this. And so what basically happened is, the day before the election, the recent election, the district attorney's offered a plea to Jesus, where they would drop all the charges against him except for a misdemeanor, accessory after the fact, with no facts in the record.
And he accepted that?
And he had been going to court for approximately 7 months at this point, so he's just tired.
So they wore him down.
They wore him down. So he copped the plea, and then they gave him his payback. And as I told you earlier before we got on the phone, I was talking to Jesus this morning and trying to see if he was interested in coming on the show. And he basically doesn't want to deal with it anymore. He got his money back, and, you know.
He wants to wash his hands of the whole affair.
He wants the whole thing to go away at this point.
Well, that's what the police and the DA count on, you know.
And so, you know, I haven't pursued much on it since then. And, but I should point out, though, that one thing that was significant to me, it was, when I finally did get a response from the police review board, I looked at their findings, and they actually deadlocked on the issue of discrimination.
3-3. 3-3. Yeah, that was while Kennedy was holding up on the appointment of a seventh member for 5 months.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Well, so subsequent to that, what I did is their review board had made it had deadlocked on this issue, it gave me reason to believe that there was more to it than met the eye, and being knowledgeable in state laws and stuff, I submitted what's called a California Public Records Act request to get any information I could about his arrest.
I tried that recently myself, and I got back no records on this issue, no records on this issue, no records on this issue, no records. So I got 4 no records. How did you do?
Oh, well, I got quite a bit of records.
All right.
Unfortunately, I didn't get what I was looking for. I basically asked them for... I basically felt that, you know, since this police review board is funded by taxpayers' money, that any of their deliberations, any of their documents, emails, and internal communications, then should become public record. And so I was seeking to receive copies of the correspondence between the police and the review board to see if there was any other evidence of previous discriminatory practices on the part of this police officer.
Which would have been very valuable information to get, and in fact, that information could have been given to you had the board required the police to do a public hearing. Of course, you would also...
Well, I did have a public hearing.
No, you didn't have a public hearing, as far as I know. There's
We had a hearing before the police review board.
No, you misunderstand what I mean. A public hearing is a special thing where you can subpoena the police officers. And it's provided for in the, in the bylaws of the Citizens Police Review Board, and they could do it by a majority vote. But in 8 years, seven or eight years, they've never done it. Even when they hired an independent investigator, they had no public hearing. What they do have is they have public meetings where you go to the public meeting, and they also have closed meetings where you can speak at the beginning of the closed meeting, present your perspective, and then they all go into the back room and they make up their own minds. And as you say, you don't get to see the records and you don't get to see what goes on.
Right. Now, the other thing that I was seeking, which I'm supposed to be able to get, is a copy of the report, the police report filed, what Jesus was charged with, what the final charges were that were filed against him, and all they provided me was a copy of the actual arresting officer's police report. They also provided me the arresting officer's police report for the other person arrested. But they never did provide me a copy of what the final charges were against both individuals. And then at one point I received a letter from the city's attorney where she basically said in writing that, well, we don't know why you're doing this. Jesus pleaded guilty. because of the plea bargain.
That may be, but you have a right to view the public records.
No, I understand. And then they also told me that they were going to look for any other records that they might have and forward them to me if they found them. That's been about 2 months ago, and I haven't heard anything from them.
Well, one place to go is to go directly to the courts and look in the DA's file. I mean, that's still an open file. If you go in there and go to the municipal court clerk and say, like, and give Jesus's name, you can look at the file.
Oh, huh.
So you might try that.
Yeah.
We're talking with Michael Boyd about a case where I was impressed because you were going on your way to file these Public Records Act requests, which I think is sort of at the heart of democracy, at the heart of open government and good government, to try to find out what officials are doing. And, of course, you know, they stonewalled you. But
well, quite frankly, my real concern with speaking with you personally, just to let you know, is you know, I was at that meeting in the city council, and I could see they didn't like you too well.
Oh, come on, don't say that.
And you know, quite frankly, you know, while I'm concerned about my employees' civil rights, I am a business. Doing business in the city of Santa Cruz, and I certainly wouldn't want to poison the well, as it would be. And so, you know, for that reason, I've been sort of hesitant to talk to you, and I should let you know that because, you know, I am worried that because I've spoken with you that somehow this might come back and haunt me somehow, because it's obvious that they don't like you, and they don't really know about me.
Now, they used to not know about you.
Yeah, exactly.
Actually, they do know about you because you're the one who filed these requests.
Yes, I'm sure, but, you know, like I said, I do own property in Santa Cruz, and the reason that Jesus was out front, in front of this property on September 11th, is because the city of Santa Cruz, for about a year, was putting extreme pressure on me on my the condition of my properties. I should point out that my properties were built in 1800, and I should also point out that recently the city did lift its letter of issues that it had outstanding against me, and that's because of Jesus's work, and I don't want to really